And what I was telling the team today, I said, what's interesting about that, by the time somebody thinks they know our model, like UHC now thinks they know the model, but they really don't. Like, our model is already shifting and transitioning, which is kind of what I want to talk about today, is the transition of our model and how it's really tied to transitional care. Because at the end of the day, if I had to describe ourselves as what we are a transitional care physician's practice.
Welcome to the Disruptive Podcast. My name is Jamie, and we're excited you're here today. We're excited you are going to listen and hear some great information about a great topic. And we have our Chief Disruption Officer, Scott Middleton, here right now as we speak. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Awesome. Yeah, it's been an exciting week. We've had some shakeups. You know, as we've talked about on the call before, sure. I'm really surprised UnitedHealthcare really hasn't been a negative impact. Most of a large number of the patients have transferred off of the insurance company onto us. I do think the funniest thing about all of it, UnitedHealthcare sent out a letter to all of their patients in South Carolina saying they were starting a brand new program to help people who were homebound. And they will send a nurse practitioner to your house for up to 1 hour to help you coordinate the care you need.
Wow.
Now, what's interesting is that these are homebound patients. They have no intent to see the patients in person after that one-time visit, but they're trying to connect you to a doctor or to somebody else to take care of you. Well, these folks can't get out to a doctor's, and so they're going to do everything by telehealth. So I'm thinking, okay, well, how are you going to get your narcotic prescriptions then? Because every 90 days you have to see the provider in person, and if they're not palliative, they have to be seen by a doctor. So these people are going to find out real quick, even if they do take on this program, it's not going to help them.
Right.
And they're going to come rolling back to us.
Absolutely.
Like we have a facility that kicked us out not long ago because they said, oh, we hired our own provider because they wanted to build a whole group of facilities. They hired one provider for 12 buildings in South Carolina, and they're going to build their own chronic care management. And they thought they could make money off of it. So this morning on the SSA call, what I'm hearing from the SSAs, all these buildings are calling and telling about how terrible the care is and how they're losing all these patients because they don't have physician services in their building anymore.
Right. So, it's amazing when people get into this and they haven't done it for years and years, like your health, how hard it is. And then they quickly find out that this is not easy. It's very complicated. It takes a lot of manpower. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of trial and error that your health has already done and already, made those changes, and continues to make updates, continues to use data effectively to be able to see these patients, know when to see these patients, using AI-driven tool. I mean, just you name it. It's not as hard as I think they're probably looking at.
Yeah, and what I was telling the team today, I said, what's interesting about that, by the time somebody thinks they know our model, like UHC now thinks they know the model, but they really don't. Like, our model is already shifting and transitioning, which is kind of what I want to talk about today, is the transition of our model and how it's really tied to transitional care. Because at the end of the day, if I had to describe ourselves as what we are a transitional care physician's practice. Mm-hmm. And that may be my new tagline, meaning that we help patients who are transitioning from health to bad health.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
You've been in the hospital or to better health, going to better health, but you've been in the hospital, you've been in the nursing home, you have had some event that has occurred that's caused you not to be able to get out and about. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to transition you. Even if I had to say about our wellness program, right. Our wellness program is a transitional program. Most of the people coming to us for wellness are coming because they are overweight. I'll just say it.
Sure.
The majority of them. I'm fat and I want to lose weight, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So great. We're going to come. Now, we in the middle of it, we find out that a lot of your weight problem is hormonal.
Right.
You need to be on hormone replacement, or you may need to have some weight loss, but we're really transitioning you. And at some point when you transition off, hopefully you stay abreast with us, you know, constantly, but you're not being seen as often.
Right.
But you're still part of our practice. So it's kind of interesting. Our whole practice is really transitional care. So what we've looked at is, you know, I'm a big guy on incentives. And so one of the things we rolled out months ago was I said, you know, our importance is we have to, when a patient comes to us, we got to get to them fast. If they're coming out of a hospital, we have to see them originally, we said, within the first 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
Because the hospital has the Medicare has these codes called transitional care. I could care less how many of those we bill, but people get in a panic because it's an expensive code. Like they pay $300.
Right.
So everybody wants to bill that code, but it really doesn't matter as much as I just know we have to see the patients quickly.
Right.
So we said first 7 days, and we incentivize any of our employees. If you go see a patient that has just been discharged from the hospital for in the first 7 days, and you could go see them every day for the mm-hmm. first 7 days, I will pay you an additional incentive. And it goes anywhere from $50 to $100, depending on your position.
Right.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm willing to pay $700 for the first week if a nurse practitioner went out to that house every single day.
Mm-hmm. And Scott, tell people why you're willing to do that, because you don't do that for no reason.
We're getting paid $80 for the mm-hmm. visit, and I'm paying out $100 because I know I will keep you out of the hospital mm-hmm. if I see you every single day.
Yeah.
Right. So what was interesting is the program really didn't work.
Mm.
We don't pay that many bonuses out. Wow. People didn't do it. They couldn't. They either they had their schedule built. There's everything from the most recent is the case managers decided, not the corporate, but case managers individually decided that they weren't going to allow people to schedule to go see a patient like a facilitator unless there was a provider who had a visit to be scheduled.
Sure.
So they didn't want somebody to show up and not have a visit. And I'm going like, no, that's backwards. So you need to be scheduling the facilitator, and then whoever needs to, whatever doctor or provider wants to see the patient can see them. Mm-hmm. But these guys can go facilitate. The point is getting out in front of the patient to figure out what's happening with them today.
Yes.
And based on when you get there, you may be calling a different provider.
Mm-hmm.
What if I walk into the house today and Miss Smith can't breathe?
Mm.
I'm going to call her pulmonologist.
Yeah.
I'm not going to call the nurse practitioner necessarily if that's all I can get. But if I can get a hold of the pulmonologist, so you don't always know. But the transition visits are important. But the issue is that last month we had 2,200 people who transitioned, who was transitioning, and we did a total of like 600 visits.
Right. Wow.
So not even a third one of a visit on every single patient. So this month we're doing better because I've yelled about it, and we've got about 4,000 transitional care visits. Now these visits are all, but it's all the visits within 30 days. So we had 2,200 new patients last month. We should have been out to see them in their home two or three times a week, probably for the first month,
mm-hmm.
because that's how we'll keep you out of the hospital.
Yep.
So we should have done 12,000, almost 12,000 transitional care visits last month. And we did like 500. This month, we're going to do maybe 4,000.
Yeah.
So it's better, but people still aren't doing it.
Right.
And so we're doing a trial. I found this nurse that I really like, and I'm offering her a job to become our first transitional care in-person nurse. I think maybe we have some transitional care nurses that are, that work in the transitional care department, but that's a remote kind of thing. But these, so her job is we're giving her a little region, and we're going to say every patient coming new or having that new event, been hospitalized, you need to go see them that first week, at least once, maybe twice.
Yeah.
And she's been doing this for 20 something years as a home health nurse. So she knows what she's looking for. And then you need to make sure while you're there that you're connecting them to say, oh my gosh, you know, here's your community health worker, here's your nurse, introducing them to our program, our physical occupational speech therapist, respiratory therapist, all of those folks, so that they know we're going to take care of you. We have a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. And then she's going to make sure that in that first assessment that we're getting all the resources. So the nurse for the patient can still come out the next, you know, of that week. She can go out that week. But at least now I have a guarantee that I'm going to get a nurse out there.
Right.
You know, triage nurses could go. I mean, there's a lot of people who could go, but I just need somebody who that's their job. To go see every single one of those new patients.
Yeah. And Scott, statistically, I mean, when you haven't made this decision lightly, you've got your team that has worked on this, has looked at stuff. Why is this so successful when it's done right?
Yeah. So, you know, what everybody will tell you in the country, there's studies galore about this, is that if you have to be in the person's home within 3 days.
Right.
And if you're not in the person's home in 3 days, they have like a 75% likelihood they'll go back to the hospital.
Wow.
That's a lot. That's a lot. And yeah, so the average patient on Medicare who I think the number was either 72 or 75 years old. If you're in the hospital, 72 to 75 and older, there is a 50% likelihood you're going to go back to the hospital.
Wow.
Of all patients.
Yeah.
Whether you went to a nursing home, a rehab center, home, whatever it is, that's just a lot.
And we've
got to stop that. And so it's all about how do we get out there fast. And the years ago, I will remember, we were one of the issues we had back. This was before we could do telehealth as well. And so only the nurse practitioners were going out, but none of them, they spent so much time going to see the new patients that then we would find patients that they hadn't seen in months.
Right.
Because they were so worried. And so we finally came back and said, listen, stop concentrating on the new patients. Make sure you take care of the ones you got. So then what we realized, well, we were just shifting resources from one to the other. We had to add resources.
Right.
So today, with having the visiting nurses and the community health workers, and we're really growing, we've got 75 therapists that work for the company now.
Right.
They haven't been productive, but they're getting ready to be. Right. I mean, out of 75 therapists, they only did like 30 or about 4,000 visits this month. So we've got to, and that was, again, we made it too complicated. Our case management schedulers,
right?
Everything was quote, going from a referral to a bucket to try to get somebody scheduled out there. Literally, it's so simple. Your executive director of clinical services has a group of patients. They have a PT over here. Find 40 patients the PT needs to see. And give them, here's 40 patients. Go see them. PTs, they know what to do when they get out there.
Right.
We have 3,500 of severe pulmonology patients that need to have respiratory therapists. We pull that out of our number, 3,500 that are severe. If you looked at people who have mild to severe pulmonary disease, we have 10,000 patients and no one is doing respiratory therapy for patients like that. Home health doesn't do respiratory therapy. If you want respiratory therapy too, you have to go to a clinic somewhere.
Wow. Yeah. And they can just get in their home.
Yep. So our goal is to have one for every care group. But again, I'm not going to write that in stone because I have 800 patients in a care group, and let's say 40% of those have pulmonary disease. Now I got 500 patients, then if I needed to do respiratory therapy all the time on those folks, then I'd need five.
Yeah.
But we're just starting to hire to see how effective the program can be.
Right.
And so I want to make sure folks know that, listen, just because this is what it says in what we call our Lucid chart, which is our org chart, mm-hmm. that you're supposed to have one per care group. If you need five per care group and you have need for that, raise your hand.
Right.
And say, hey, I need some help. We need more respiratory therapists.
Yeah. Yeah. If there's one thing I've learned about you, Scott, in the years that I've known you, things should not be written in stone. It can change. It can be modified. It can be made better. And sometimes you just need to quit it, you know, and sometimes, I mean, there's nothing should be set in stone. There's no hard and fast rules unless it's a law.
Right. And this Lucid chart has become something we live and die by. Mm-hmm. And it's got to, and so I created some new positions this week. Well, I've created a lot of new positions this year, respiratory therapist, which we didn't have. But this transitional care nurse, I'm hoping this works, and I'm not putting it on the Lucid chart for mm-hmm. us to go hire 23 of these.
Right.
I'm saying, let's see how this one works.
Yep.
But I think that it's really what started me on it was I met this person and I knew I wanted to hire her. She had worked for home health company for 20 years mm-hmm. and they didn't treat her right. I mean, that company has changed and been sold so many different times. The new group comes in. She's been working for this group, even though it's sold four or five times for 20 years, very comfortable. And then all of a sudden they come up and do something stupid and she gets mad and quits. Mm-hmm. And so when I called her, I said, well, let me ask you this. What you gonna do? Like, you just quit your job Monday, right? And she said, she looked at me, and she was on the phone, and she said, Scott, I'm a nurse. I can find a job anywhere, and I'm a damn good nurse. Yeah. I can find a job.
Yeah.
And she said, but just to answer your question, what am I gonna do? She said, I had a second job that I was doing, and I will just go to that second job and do more work with them, even though it's kind of PRN. She said, right. They'll give me plenty of work. And I said, no, honey, I'm going to give you plenty of work. You're exactly what we're looking for. So I hope she takes the job. If she's listening out there, I hope she listens to my podcast and know that I'm talking about her. I was just so excited because she really does understand the transition because she's been a home health nurse. Yeah. That's what they did.
Yeah.
And I think she's going to be a good part. But we've got to figure out how to transition everybody and what that model looks like. I had an SSA say to me, well, a lot of people just don't like our model. And I said, well, I'm telling you what they don't like. We're seeing people too much is what the complaint was. Mm-hmm. The patients are saying we're seeing them too much. I think the problem is we're calling them too much to mm-hmm. tell them about appointments.
Yeah.
What they need to know is I'm your PT, OT. It's a PT. I'm going to be here every Monday. Mm-hmm. I'm going to see you every Monday for the next 6 weeks. Nobody complains about home health that they're seeing them too much, right?
Yeah, right.
That's not the issue because home health just comes out and says, we're going to be here Monday and Thursday for mm-hmm. the next 8 weeks.
Yep.
You know, this is what we're going to do. That's what we have to do. Respiratory therapist is coming on Wednesday. PT is coming on Friday and the OPT is coming on Monday.
Yeah.
Then maybe you don't need your community health worker and your nurse necessarily to go out, but maybe you do.
Yeah.
But you can schedule all of those. Yeah, Nobody's going to complain about that.
Right. And Scott, another thing I think you're fighting against is a healthcare culture that says, yeah, you only see your doctor when you need them. You know, they're going to schedule an appointment with you after you get out of the hospital within 3 to 4 weeks to go see your primary care. They're used to that. They're not used to actual health care that's going to keep you from going back to the hospital. And I think that's always going to be an uphill battle until we get people used to the fact that, hey, you don't want to go back to the hospital, do you? Well, this is what works.
Well, what's interesting as I pondered this week, I was talking to somebody and they said, well, pretty much what you are doing is either a home health or a hospice model of care, except you've added the provider. And I said, right. Mm-hmm. But people are so adapt to resist change.
Mm-hmm.
All right, our entire corporation and most of the people who run our organization have come out of nursing home assisted livings or hospice care.
Yep.
We promoted it. You think about this for years. I had, when we sold our buildings in 10 years ago this year, we had 150 therapists that worked for us.
Mm-hmm.
I knew how important therapy was. We even knew that 25% of our patients in our facilities needed to be on therapy at any given time to reduce our hospitalization rate. We knew that.
Right.
But yet, as primary care physicians, we weren't doing therapy until recently because we didn't think, why? Because that's not what primary care physicians do.
Hmm.
And so we were operating our own company and we were pulled into the model format, which is also why the patients say, well, I never saw the doctor this much. Well, you've never been this sick. And plus, your doctors weren't incentivized to keep you out of the hospital either. Right. They were actually incentivized to put you in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to rethink. We know the hospice and the home health and the assisted living models. And they work.
Yes.
The assisted living model works if you have therapy in the building, if mm-hmm. you have nurses in the building. And now we got to figure out how do you take that model to the house?
Right.
And we can do it. We know we can do it. But that means we have to increase this whole transitional care mode. Is that, you know, when originally I went to all the home health companies and I said, I want to partner with you.
Right.
And they said, oh, yeah, great. You're going to send us lots of referrals. And I said, yes, you can have them all. Here's the condition. You have to facilitate visits. You have to be part of our care team. So you have to communicate
mm-hmm.
your information, you know, with us as a provider. But they didn't.
Mm.
They'll send us notes. Here's the other piece I just have to say that's a base of our model. Providers, and we're not going to change this, a provider, doctor, nurse practitioner, they are not going to think about a patient for the most part. I'm not saying they're not sensitive. They are. But they're not thinking about the patient until there is a scheduled visit.
Yeah.
They're seeing anywhere between 30 and 50 people a day. They're mm-hmm. just worried about the person sitting in front of them. So one of the things I've told our respiratory therapist is that you're going to go see a patient every week. That's the general model for respiratory therapy. It's been working for years, so we'll see if it continues to work right. So you go see a patient for 36 weeks, and then after 36 weeks, you have to get recertified. But you can see them for 36 weeks. I said, the first week you go out, you're going to do a visit with the doctor. The next week, you may be doing a visit with a nurse practitioner that sees them at home. The next week, you may do something with a virtual nurse practitioner. And then the last week, you would do it with the pulmonologist.
Right.
So every week, and somebody says, well, why do they need to see the provider every time? Because each one of those providers in the month could be making medical decisions that are going to be pertinent to that patient. But if they don't have the information, which is what the respiratory therapist is telling them, they will not make a good medical decision.
Right.
And if they don't talk to the respiratory therapist and yes, there's notes in the chart, but I guarantee you somebody calls at 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon and says, hey, I can't breathe. The first thing out of that provider's mouth is call 911.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The first thing the provider should have said is, well, you know, I just talked to you with the respiratory therapist last Thursday. Hold on a second. Let me get the respiratory therapist on the phone for you.
Yes.
What's going on here? Can I keep you from having to go to the hospital?
Mm-hmm.
The other is medication administration piece of it. 10 to 1. The reason that person's calling is they haven't used their nebulizer in 3 days.
Mm, yep.
But the provider's not going to think about that. But guess who knows that? The respiratory therapist. Because every time they go out, they're going to go, look at that nebulizer. Is this the same one you were using a month ago?
Right.
You should have been a, why do you have five nebulizers in your bucket over here of drugs?
Right.
Because you're not using it. Yeah. Or, you know, whatever that, or the treatments that they mm-hmm. do. So you have to communicate. And I think that's going to be the key for us moving forward. It's how do you make sure that all the providers that are involved in that person's care, including specialists, really understand what's going on with that patient?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, how many times have you seen just a simple oxygen hose that's, it's got a kink in it. They don't know it. They don't realize it because they haven't been up. And, you know, a day they've been sitting in the same chair the entire time and they have no clue their oxygen's not working.
You know, and what happens with sick folks? So when Evelyn, my wife had her knee replacement surgery a year and a half or so ago, she had a rough time and she still will say today, I kind of wish I didn't do it.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
So I kind of thought she would grow out of it. It's like a baby. You have the baby and most women at the first one, they go, oh hell, I'm never doing that again. And next thing you know, they're having another one.
Sure.
So the end result sometimes is worth the pain, but I, for her, I don't think the pain for the surgery was worth the end result that she has. But anyway, I just remember that her world got very isolated because she couldn't drive for several weeks. She couldn't really get out up and down a lot. She couldn't move around. And so the whole struggle of everything, you know, for her around that, when you have some illness or you don't see things clearly for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happens to a lot of our patients. And they don't really think about, oh, I didn't do my therapy. I didn't do this. And again, having those reminders and that person constantly out there. But I'll challenge our staff, if they're listening to this podcast, for somebody to call me with any patient who complained because the nurses and the community health workers were coming to the house too many times.
Mm-hmm.
I think the complaint is that we've been calling them too many times for a telehealth visit.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what they complain about.
Mm-hmm.
If the facilitator is in the house, I don't think they're complaining about the fact they're calling the doctor.
Agreed.
I think they want to be seen and they need to be seen in person.
Right.
And that's the failure that United Healthcare will not get. United Healthcare thinks, oh, we can do all of this just via telehealth. I'm just laughing inside because of the number of people we have who can't even do a telehealth call, mm-hmm. number of patients.
And you're not saying this without the experience. You know, you've talked to countless providers. You've talked to, you know, countless healthcare professionals. You know this for a fact. It's not rocket science.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we experience it every single day. I mean, think about it. Yesterday we saw 4,000 patients.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. And 75% of those patients are in person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the crazy number, is that because we've added these facilitators, 75% of our patients are being seen in person, and that's what's reducing hospitalizations.
Right.
At the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Scott, this is fascinating and you never cease to amaze me. And so, you know, transitional care, that's where it's at. It's gotta be the future. You're on it, you know, and it's going to take time for companies like United Healthcare. I've told like four or five seniors in the last couple weeks, you need to get off United Healthcare. It's not good for you.
Well, And really the fact is that I think the problem is that these payers are trying to become the providers.
Mm-hmm.
And that bothers me, in that, because now I'm thinking I have to become a payer.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to go out there and contract directly with the government to be the payer, mm-hmm. to pay ourselves in order to protect ourselves. But then there is no protection. I was talking to somebody this week, and they said, yeah, they were on commercial insurance, but they said their husband had a little issue, went to the hospital over the weekend, and they did a CAT scan, mm-hmm. and then went to a specialist on Monday or Tuesday, and they said, oh, I need to do another CAT scan, but I need to do it with the dye so I can see what's going on inside your body and all. And the insurance denied it and said, well, you already had a CAT scan 2 days ago. We're not going to allow you to do another one. But this doctor can't make a good medical decision to know what's wrong with this patient. And so we're just going to let the patient suffer and die. But that's what these insurance companies are for. But think about this. At least now they have a provider who's calling the insurance company saying, what in the hell are you doing? This person's going to die, and this is why. They can talk to the medical director at the payer to negotiate this. But when down the road, all of those providers are working for the payer, the payer is just going to say no, and they're going to go, well, my boss said no.
Right.
And they turn around and you fall apart. Yeah. So that really concerns. It's kind of like the hospitals having primary care physicians. I don't think any hospital should own a primary care physician practice, because the primary care physician should be trying to prevent hospitalizations, not increase them.
Right.
But the hospitals have tried to get into every piece of the pie of healthcare, and I think that's going to be the detriment of our group.
Wow. Yeah, I agree, Scott. Yeah. Scott, thanks so much. This has been great. What's your final word for your health employees and providers? And
I think my new tagline is for the employees is go see your damn patients. It's as simple as that. Go see your damn patients. Yeah. Get somebody out and go see your damn patients. Right.
Absolutely.
Make sure that we are seeing patients.
Yes.
And there's gotta be a lot of in-person visits, but guys, we've empowered you. And this therapy, the therapy piece is just brilliant. I will say to our upper management echelon, one of the things that we're looking at is if therapist goes out, they kind of get a twofer, because we run out of chronic care management every month. Last month, 25% of the chronic care management we performed, we didn't get paid for because we were over the number of minutes. If you send a PTA or a COTA, if there is a therapist going out to see a patient, they are billing therapy codes that are completely separate from CCM for their time that they're there. So if we had instead replaced those 25,000 hours with therapy codes, then I forgot how much it was. It was like $1.6 million more we would have received.
Yeah.
And you guys know me. If I get $1.6 million more, I'm going to spend it on more care for more patients.
Exactly. More jobs, more everything. Yes.
More jobs, more things. Mm-hmm. And then people get frustrated who work for me, and my family gets frustrated. Well, Scott, when are you going to keep it for yourself?
Mm.
And I'm going, we're probably not. We're going to go spend it, because there's so much more. Like we had a patient this week who was going to get kicked out of their facility because they ran out of money, and our SSA is out there negotiating. Trying to figure out how to scrape up enough money from various family members and from the facility given discounts. You know, we're not paid to do that.
Right.
But we do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So transitioning is what we do. So, we're getting ready to pop a new proposal out to start managing palliative care programs in hospitals.
Right.
And the program is really cool because it's going to be, there will not be any current out-of-pocket expenses to the hospitals, because basically we're going to increase their general inpatient, their GIP numbers to help pay for it.
Right.
And so it really could be an exciting program for us. But again, that's part of the transition. So we would actually be in the hospital helping people transition appropriately home.
Yeah.
So again, transitional care, that's who we are. It doesn't matter if it's a wellness program or a patient coming home after major surgery. We're there to transition you till you get to the health goals that you have.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Scott, thanks so much.
Thanks, Jamie. You have a good weekend.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks for listening today to the Disruptive Podcast. Scott reminded us today that the disruption isn't about shiny ideas or just new buzzwords. It's about showing up for patients. At the end of the day, it's simple. Go see your patients and do the work that keeps them out of the hospital. Transitional care. That's where it's at. Thanks again for listening. Please subscribe. Please share this with a colleague or somebody who needs to hear it. Maybe a home health professional, maybe somebody in a hospital. Just share it. Get the good news out there about transitional care and Scott's podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Your Health Primary Care, and it is produced, recorded, and edited by Jamie Preston and Story Society Creative. Thanks so much. Have a great week.